For the first time ever, we are combining forces. Tonight is an episode of, we haven't decided if it's a pod of the show or a poddo the show or a pod, I don't know what we're calling it, but it's a combination show between Amazing Avenue Audio, the show, and a pod of our own. And so I am Brian. With me tonight are my friends Allison and Linda. Hello, folks. This is fun.
Hey, Brian.
Hi, Brian. Super psyched about this crossover episode. I know we did like that crazy week where we did crossovers on all the podcasts, but I don't think that this was the exact combination when we did that. I remember I was on From Complex to Queens for that, so and very exciting to have this particular crossover.
I believe I did Unformidable for that, so
I was on the show with Chris, so this is my second time on the show.
Okay, and this is my first time on a poddo, so this is good.
It's like a complete reshuffling of it all. It's awesome.
But so it just worked out that Chris and I were supposed to record tonight, and Chris had a work emergency, so he can't be here. And then you guys are down a co-host for this week, and so we thought it'd be fun to combine everything and bring these shows together. So we also have so much to talk about. Like, I feel like sometimes these shows are like, all right, how can we stretch 5 minutes of content into 40 minutes? But tonight we legitimately have a ton to discuss. So for those that have been living under a rock, the sale from the Mets, from the Wilpons to Steve Cohen, officially went through on Friday. On Friday, Cohen cleaned house of many of the Mets front office personnel, including GM Brody Van Wagenen, assistant to the GM Omar Minaya, Allard Baird, just sort of everybody in the front office that wasn't an Alderson hire or John Rico were just completely wiped out. And so yesterday, Tuesday, was the Cohen and Sandy Alderson introductory press conference. And I know that you guys did not get to watch it live, but what were your general impressions of the Cohen presser from what you read and the highlights that you saw?
Well, I was kind of following the live tweets, and I was like, oh my god, like, I didn't know if they were real or not, because it was almost too good to be true. I was like, I hope these people aren't lying right now. Especially when he said Black Lives Matter, I almost, like, fell off my chair at my desk at work. I was like, I really hope these people aren't, like, shitting me right now, like, that just... like, just came out of left field. But I don't know, like, what the lead up to that was that or something. But
I can tell you what the lead up to that was, because
okay.
I was watching it. So somebody asked him about just like the general tenor in baseball right now and in the country, how protests and, you know, basically how do you plan on, I guess, I don't want to say like interfacing with that's kind of the wrong way to put it, but they were just asking like what you know, just sort of how the general tenor of social justice has impacted our country but also baseball. And his quote was, I think these are important questions that America is discussing. Black lives do matter. I think it's important to have a diverse set of employees, not just for diversity's sake, but for diversity of thought.
Wow.
It's just like, I mean obviously, I think it's easy to go a little too far with these things as far as, like, our expectations of, like, who Cohen is as a person. But even to just hear something as simple as that is revolutionary in this context.
Yes.
I saw one person ask, is he the first owner to say it? To say those exact words,
as far as I know.
As far as I know, too, but I am not a reliable source on this.
Like, you know, the social medias have tweeted it, but has any, like, owner actually come out and said it? And, like,
I know
if
that,
he has, then, like you said, that's revolutionary.
I know that in the immediate aftermath of George Floyd and the protests, and if you guys recall, all the teams were releasing these, like, milquetoast sort of statements. And I remember that the Orioles went further than everybody else. And I'm trying to remember if there's an actual, like, Angelos Black Lives Matter quote that was involved in that. and I can't remember. Because, like, of all the ownership groups, at least that, like, I'm familiar with, I would say that he would be the most likely to have potentially said it. But I cannot confirm that he actually has said those words out loud. But yeah, and like even something as simple as that, and even something as simple, because that should be the bare minimum, right? But in but the bar is in Hades at this point for these people. But and even something as simple for as like, I'm not in this to make money, like that should be like something that a lot of owners say, because that's the way that the culture should be. And yet it is revolutionary to hear that out of an owner's mouth.
Yeah, it's crazy to me because, you know, and I know if Kellyanne was here, she'd be yelling at all of us that, you know, that he's a ghoul and he's a billionaire and all that. And I don't disagree with any of that. But I just think that there is such a sharp contrast in the way he is thinking about this team versus how the Wilpons thought about this team. Now, the Wilpons did not need the Mets to be rich. The Wilpons were rich outside of the Mets. Even if they didn't always act like it, they were, right? But Cohen is basically saying, my wealth is not the reason. I mean, it's the reason he's there because, you know, he needs to be wealthy to buy the team. But the, he is not in this in order to line his pockets more. He's in this because he's a Mets fan. And that just seems, it shouldn't be shocking that, that an owner said that.
Yeah.
But it absolutely is.
Right.
Or that he said that they want to win. Like, that was revolutionary.
Yes.
Why is that so, like, earth-shattering? But right now it is, especially given the state of baseball and given the state of, you know, the Mets the past 30 years.
I think the Wilpons did desperately want to win, though.
They did.
I think they really did want to win. I think that was, like, the one thing. They were incompetent at attempting it, but I think that the one thing that you can kind of give them credit for, and I'm not trying to, like, be revisionist history on the Wilpons by any stretch of the imagination. Like, they were bad. Let's put that, let's get that out of the way. But I think that one thing that you can give them, at least, is that they did want to win. They did want the team to win. They were just bad at executing it.
Yes.
Yeah, but they, and also, it was my dream. I know, like, you're not into hockey, Allison, and I don't know about you, Brian, but...
I'm not, but that's okay.
It was my dream. Like, Rangers Dolan is, like, the dream owner. Like, just hire good people, sign the checks and get out of the way. Like, now that Henrik Lundqvist isn't on the Rangers anymore, I doubt Dolan knows anybody on the team. Like, just completely hands off. Just, okay, who do you want? I'll sign the check, whatever. It, like, he's so Jekyll and Hyde between the Knicks and the Rangers. And the Rangers version is the ideal owner. And that's what came across to me from Cohen, too, when he said, I only played Little League. Like, I don't, like... I haven't played baseball since Little League. I'm going to let the baseball people do their jobs. And, oh, the best quote was, I don't want anybody learning on my dime. I was like, oh.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I think that's the starkest contrast with the Wilpons, really. Yes. With his attitude toward, like, I'm not a baseball man and I'm not going to pretend I am. Like, I'm just a fan with lots of money.
Yeah. And I want to hire my toy, the best people.
More or less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a good contrast too, was, you know, the Wilpon. I mean, there's something to be said for giving people a chance, and I get it, but that's also not the best way of maybe building a team that's sustainable, or, you know, builds a good culture.
Yeah, he was specifically talking about the president of baseball operations, and so I think that there's plenty of room for people who are new to a position in his framework, but in terms of the person who's running the show, I think he wants a pro, and I think that's a completely fair position to take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I think that a lot of us maybe got googly eyed at Brody because he was this young, incredibly good looking, incredibly charismatic dude, and like I've met Brody twice, and let me tell you, I would have done anything he asked me to do at that point. Like, he just has a way with people. He's super funny and charming. And I was talking, me and Chris were talking to him at the Stephen Matz charity bowling event. And he stopped at one point and was like, is this off the record? And we're like, of course. And then he dropped the most benign story of all time. Like, you thought he was going to say, like, you know, this is off the record. I'm tripping balls right now. Like, you know, nothing. It was just like he said the most benign thing. But he was just so charming and fun. And I think when you watch him, you thought, like, here's a really smart young guy who's going to grow into this job. And no offense to Brody, he never really did that. No, granted, he wasn't really given the chance to do that either.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think Cohen made it clear that, you know, his hires are going to be far more Aldersonian than Van Wagenen.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, can I just say I have a special place in my heart for Brody since he got me my mans?
Yes, that is fair. It was arguably his best move as general manager.
And he did get Strowman. Like, is Strowman his legacy now?
Strowman and Davis are his legacy, yeah.
Yeah,
it's not as sexy as those other two, but I would throw Justin Wilson into that triumvirate because that was actually like a legitimately good thing that Van Wagenen did.
Yes. And I think if Van Wagenen had a better ownership group behind him and had more time and insert
money.
insert other good things here, he could have done a decent job, but he just didn't.
And maybe wasn't surrounded by like this like laughable franchise. You know what I'm saying? Like it's not just the ownership at the top. It's like the way that they ran the ship was not conducive to anyone's success.
Agreed.
He wasn't put in a position to succeed at all.
I wonder, and this is a topic for a different day, but do you think he'll ever get another job in baseball in this capacity?
I could see him being like a consultant in a front office because, you know, he has seen the other side now. So now he knows both angles. Like, he knows the agent side. And granted, it's a dysfunctional front office side, but it's still a front office side.
Someone should hire him to be the PR rep for a front office.
Oh, absolutely. Because, like,
good at that.
Yeah, I mean, his introductory press conference, we're like, yeah, we're ready to run through a wall for this guy. Like, he said all the right things. Like, he could very easily do PR and, like, sell you anything, and you'll be willing to believe it.
100%. It's the Squidward, oh no, he's hot!
I know. And also, I think he did have, like, his heart was in the right place. With a lot of, like, I think he's a good person.
Oh, yeah.
Unlike, like, some smarmy, like, snake oil salesman. Like, I think he did genuinely care.
Let me also say, the invitation is there for him to come on any of our shows whenever he wants to. If Brody wants to talk, I want to listen. So,
although I had Brody.
I don't know if I told you that my coworker's son is best friends with his son.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And, he took him to games, and like Brody's son ended up going to a different school this year because they were in high school. And so her nephew was like, do you think he'll still want to be friends with me? And, but you know, she said they started like a drive for like to help like food pantries and things this year. And she said, anytime her nephew met Brody, he was like, oh, so who do you think I should sign? Or how do you think I'm doing? And he took him to games. He like drove him in his Porsche to a game.
That's awesome.
So he did seem like he made her nephew feel included anytime he was around. So I think he is just a genuinely decent person.
Yeah.
And I think that that moment that we got, like, I'm so glad that we got that hot mic moment at the end of Brody Van Wagenen's tenure where he, like, totally dunked on Rob Manfred because that endeared me to him so much more.
Forever.
And I think it's going to keep his memory, like, so much better in my mind than it would have been if we didn't have that.
We have so much more to talk about, but I have to share a Brody story because I'm never on a potto. And so if there's someone who doesn't listen to the show, I want them to hear this. So it's spring training. Earlier this year, I can't believe that was 2020. It feels like a decade ago.
Oh my God, I know.
Was there people at spring this year? Really?
Yeah, I was there. I was one of them. And so I was standing like kind of on the third base line, just like in front of some stands. And I looked next to me and Brody's right there. And so I said, hey, Brody, you're never going to remember me. Brian Salvatore, amazing. And he goes, oh yeah, we talked to the Mats thing. He remembered who I was, which is fucking crazy. And we were talking, and he was laughing, and we were having a good time, but he was very intently watching the game. and that's the game that Tebow ate shit in the outfield where he tripped over his own feet. And so right. It was at that moment. So and he just went, oh, shit, like that, like real quietly. Just like, I don't think he knew I heard him, but just like... And it was this very humanizing moment.
Relatable content.
Yeah. And then I said, like, all right, man, I'm going to let you go. Have a good day. I just walked away.
Amazing.
Oh, I love it so much.
Yeah. So, fare thee well, Brody Van Wagenen.
Yeah, good try. Your heart was in the right place. And, yeah, good luck and God bless.
Exactly. So, let's see. What else happened in the Cohen presser? I think him mentioning doing an old timers day is great.
Yes. Bringing that back would be awesome.
And just that, you know, I wrote that piece a while ago about how they can honor their history better. And, that's one of them. But it's just, you know, it's sad that, you know, they just trot out the same sad alumni at, like, events. Like, oh, it's always John Franco and it's always, you know... And, like, when was the last time, like, Johan Santana was around the club, or R.A. Dickey, or, you know, anybody? And, you know, just, they had such bad relationships with the Wilpons, and I'm just hoping that it's a fresh start for everybody, for the entire organization, the alumni included, because it would be, I mean, having Pedro, like... talking to DeGrom would just be outstanding, like in spring training, or just have him in the booth because he's just so smart and just so interesting to talk to. And he's compared himself to DeGrom. And so, like, you know, he's not, you know, you don't think of Pedro and think Mets, but he is an alumni. So just from the old timers day to maybe retiring more numbers, but it seemed at least Cohen's open to that. Well, I don't know about the retiring numbers, but at least, you know, acknowledge. And he said the Seaver statue too would be ready, right?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yep. On opening day.
So it seems like he has, you know, his priorities are in the right place.
I mean, dude gets it. His first Mets game was in the Polo Grounds. Like, you know, he's been real. A fan forever. If he's smart, and he certainly is, they should make Wright's title official. Make David Wright an official team ambassador or something. Mm-hmm. Because I think that David Wright is maybe the only alumni, aside from John Franco, the only alum who shows up to everything they ask him to.
Yeah.
And so tap that guy, who should be at every event, because you know he has relationships with Dickey and Santana and all those folks he played with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, even Curtis Granderson... Like, he's such a great ambassador. Like, I just want to see Grandy, like, back in the organization in some capacity.
And it's like, how many owners have, like, have there ever been players tweeting GIFs like Noah Syndergaard just did of himself, like, well, not himself, but, like, a GIF of, like, someone running through a brick wall in response to... Steve Cohen and Marcus Stroman already tweeting, like, I can't wait to talk to you. I'm so excited to play for you and stuff like that. Like, I remember, like, the players tweeting a lot of that sort of, or the more online players, I should say, tweeting stuff like that when Brody Van Wagenen's presser happened. But it's a little bit different at the GM level. Like, do you remember ever players getting this excited about an owner? Like, imagine anyone tweeting about the Wilpons, like any player tweeting about the Wilpons.
Well, they would never probably be traded if they did. Noah Syndergaard especially.
I mean, you guys saw what Syndergaard tweeted when the sale went through, right?
Yeah.
You know, he basically said, like, I hope the new ownership treats players more like people and less like commodities or whatever he said. Like, you know, it was pretty harsh words.
Yeah, which was, and I mean, like, not unwarranted at all.
Oh, no. So Cohen, he said he wants to win a World Series within the next 3 to 5 years, if not sooner. And like we said, that shouldn't be a pull quote, because what owner shouldn't be saying that? But, you know, he said it. He also, he showed an Aldersonian level of shade throwing.
Yes. Yeah, like
two of them so are hysterical.
When they asked about the other bidders for the team, he said, "Who were the other bidders? I don't remember." Which is fucking brilliant. Just
amazing. Mariah Carey, I don't know her.
Exactly. Exactly. So
amazing.
So great. He also, you know, they also asked about the vote from the other owners and if he was disappointed in not being unanimous, and he said, "I got 26 votes. You need 23 to be an owner. I accomplished my goal."
Yeah. What else needs to be said? Like, you can't get rid of me now.
Like, yeah. I don't give a crap if these other dudes like me.
Yeah, like
it felt like that Don Draper gif. Like I feel sorry for you. I don't think about you at all. You know, like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like I don't care if you guys like me. And like, if you're the other owners, like I kind of don't blame some of them for voting against him because like looking at this presser, it's like, oh shit, is this the bar now?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because. Well, wasn't that the fear, like, when it was first rumored he was buying the team, was that the other owners were afraid he would spend money?
Yeah.
And, basically. Like, just completely blow their scam out of the water?
Well, he's now the richest owner in baseball.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I want to say he's top five all-pro sports in the United States.
Really?
I think he was, like, the third richest.
Or yeah. Yeah, it's some crazy thing. And you got to realize, he just spent $2.5 billion on the team, and he may spend another $2 billion on SNY, and he's still going to be in the top five owners in all of professional sports.
Oh my gosh, I can't even picture that amount of money. That's unfathomable to me. And yes. I think we said this on a pod out the last time. I think he's wealthier than the next three owners combined.
I believe so.
Oh, wow. That is crazy. That is wild.
But, you know, he also, you know, he's doing the right thing. He's paying the workers. He said he wants to invest in the community. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he is doing, like, he's not just this, you know, mogul on high, just, like, sharing decrees. Like, he's investing in everything in the team, the organization, the community, the fans, and it's like it's almost too good to be true. Like we have so much Stockholm syndrome that like I said, when I was seeing all the tweets come through, I'm like, none of this is real. I don't know how to feel right now. Like,
well, I know, like, it's kind of like an identity crisis a little bit.
Yes,
it's like, what do we do when, like, because, like, wait, is being a Mets fan, like, cool now? Like, I don't know how to process that.
Well, I don't know if you saw Renee, our friend of the show, Renee from Purple Row. She was following his press conference, and she goes, "Can I be a Mets fan now?" And because the Rockies are breaking her heart. And
yeah.
And it's like, are the Mets, like, really, like you said, are we cool? Are we, like, the destination team now? Like, that's just, I don't know how to process that.
Alderson said that. Alderson said overnight things changed.
Yeah.
He said players are calling, agents are calling. Everyone wants to work for the Mets now.
Wow.
That's so cool.
That is really cool.
Go ahead, Linda.
I don't know, like, it's just me, but I really want to make the Yankees fans mad.
Oh, me too.
I know. Because, they're so, like, mad.
Like, we'll awesome. Be getting and all the good players. We have the richer owner. Like, can we rub that in their faces now?
Yes.
Perhaps.
And remember, Linda, remember on the show, like, a few weeks ago when we were talking about, this was before the sale was finalized, obviously, but it was, like, at the point where it was, like, inevitable. Remember when we were talking about how, like, we always get so mad when, like, Dodgers fans complain because they're so spoiled, but then they complain about stuff, and you're like, yeah, come on. And I was like, I can't wait for that to be us. Like, I can't wait for us to complain about some stupid, petty shit that doesn't matter, and other fans to be like, imagine being a Mets fan and complaining, you have it so hard. I can't wait for that to be us. For
like, after we already signed, like, Springer and Stroman and, like, trade for Lindor, like, god damn it, we didn't get Brad Hand.
Yeah, like, exactly. I can't wait for that to be us. That's all I want, is for other people to get mad about us complaining.
So the one thing I did not tweet yesterday, because I got a work phone call mid-presser, so I was half listening, but somebody asked about analytics, and you know, he at first gave the bullshit answer that was like, oh, analytics are important, but so is the human experience or whatever. But then he said, you know, I watched the World Series and the Rays were a hell of a team. And he said, like, you know, even with the best analytics, sometimes decisions don't go your way. And I would have done the exact same thing in that game.
Really?
But you know, sometimes the odds don't go your way. And I just thought, like, wow, here's a guy who actually understands how analytics work. And I'm sure that's because his job is very analytical. But
it's true.
Yeah.
Like, and yeah, like being like a hedge fund manager is all about like playing the numbers more or less, right? Like, and playing the odds.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and also another thing that I said, he said, I have a second job. Right, yeah. And he's like, this isn't his main job. And, but he was like, I'm going to, you know, I'm used to, like we said, hiring the best people. And he was like, I hold them accountable, but I give them room to run. And I thought that was also an interesting quote, too, because we know the previous ownership, we can now say, did the exact opposites of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, they just meddled and, you know, like what they said, like, it didn't matter who they hired, you know, they had the final say. Like, you know, Sandy would have to, you know, beg for money or, you know, really, you know, he needed a player, say, hey, we kind of need bullpen help, please let me trade for bullpen help. So it's like, why did you even bother hiring anybody if you were just gonna have the final say anyway? Like, there's no trust in the position. So I think that's also another good benefit of Cohen coming in, is, you know, it'll attract better people to the front office, because then it gives them a chance to show what they can do without running into walls every time.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, because, like, not only does he want to hire competent people, like, yeah, you can want to hire competent people all you want, but if competent people don't want to work for you, then you've got a problem. And the Wilpons were, you know, had their reputation preceded them as far as, like, who would want to come to that front office under that ownership group. That's all gone. And like you said, Brian, like, he said it changed overnight because all of a sudden everybody wants to work for the Mets now because they have, like, the shiny new toy.
It still blows my mind. People want to work for the Mets.
I know, right? It's going to take a while for that
coming out of your mouth.
Well, in addition to Cohen, we also had Sandy Alderson speak, and he didn't have as many sort of, you know, big ticket things that he talked about. But a few things I think are of note that I just wanted to get in here. He mentioned that he expects Luis Rojas to be the manager, but he wants to involve the new president of baseball operations in the decision of who the manager should be, which I think is fair. And he said, you know, he spoke to Rojas about this, and he said all of this to Rojas. This is not breaking news. I thought Rojas did about as good of a job as he could have done. I know we can nitpick with any manager. You can nitpick decisions and all of that. But it seemed like...
Wait, there's breaking Andy Martino news.
Oh, what is
oh,
that?
Oh, Jesus.
They interviewed Michael Hill for president of baseball operations. Huh. I don't know who Michael Hill is.
Neither do I offhand. That? You guys talk. Let me Google this. Michael Hill baseball.
So, I don't. The other thing that Sandy Alderson said, or because I didn't watch the presser live, I like am losing track of what was Sandy Alderson and what was Cohen. But I think this was Alderson, and I don't know if it was in the presser itself or during the like WFAN interview like afterwards. But he said something about like they would have claimed Brad Hand, but the timing wasn't right, and yes. I just found that whole thing to be odd. Like, what I know, I understand that like the Wilpons were like still on their way out and the sale hadn't been finalized, and that's probably what they meant. But like, I don't know, that like that was kind of the one frustrating thing to me, because it's like it like claiming Brad Hand off waivers was like such an obvious thing that the Mets could have done.
Agreed.
And because they were like, it was the exact moment where they were changing ownership groups, they just like couldn't do it because of bureaucratic reasons or like what?
Yeah.
So
well,
Michael,
I mean,
Michael Hill,
you can just sign him. Okay,
that's
go.
True. Michael Hill was the was with the Marlins. He was their VP, assistant GM, and general manager. He was the president baseball operations briefly, and I don't know when he stopped working for them. But it looks like, I guess, he was the GM from 07 to 2013 and was the president of baseball ops until 2015, it appears.
Okay.
Cuban American guy.
Interesting.
With a Harvard degree.
Okay.
Anyway.
I'm kind of at the point where, like, you know, we'll see all the people they interview. I'm like, I'm going to have to trust Cohen's judgment on Sandy Alderson's judgment, because what choice do I have? I don't want to be, like, skeptical right off the bat or anything.
Yeah.
This is advertiser content.
We now have 2.3 million people incarcerated in America. Less than 7% of them are incarcerated for violent crime.
That's attorney Jeffrey Robinson, director of the ACLU Trone Center for Justice and Equality. His work inspired the making of Who We Are, a podcast by Ben and Jerry's and produced by Vox Creative. Who We Are, A Chronicle of Racism in America, is hosted by Peabody Award-winning journalist Carvel Wallace.
Surely you knew this was a racist country. What does that mean for us today?
The prison population in the United States has increased 700% since 1970. Black Americans make up almost 40% of it.
We didn't get here by accident. I didn't know these things because I hadn't been taught them. And then the question is, why wasn't I taught them? Because this information, it may be hidden, but it's hiding in plain sight.
Who We Are takes a historic look at the disease of racism in America and traces it back to its tipping points. This includes the tipping point we're at today.
I think Americans are watching and thinking and looking at this issue in ways they never have before. And that's why I say this is our last best chance. Because if we don't get it right this time, where America is headed is someplace I don't think anybody wants to go.
How do we make our last best chance count? Listen to Who We Are, a podcast by Ben and Jerry's and produced by Vox Creative, now streaming wherever you get your podcasts.
Verizon just turned on 5G across the country. With the coverage of 5G nationwide and more cities, the unprecedented performance of ultra wideband, the fastest 5G in the world. Ultra wideband is so fast, you can download an album in seconds. Verizon 5G won't just change how your phone works, it will change how businesses do everything. This is the 5G America's been waiting for, only from Verizon. 5G ultra wideband available only in parts of select cities. 5G nationwide available in 1,800 plus cities. Global claim based on open signal independent analysis during the period January 31st through April 30th, 2020.
But the other things Alderson said, he said it made news that he said that we have a new president-elect.
Oh, yeah.
He accepts the results of the election, which, you know, we'll leave that as it is. But
again, the bar is in Hades. Like people freaked out about that. And I was like, it actually doesn't say anything about his political beliefs, guys, that he said that. It says is that he literally just is talking about the results of the election like they're true, which is like the bare minimum.
He's a rational adult.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So he said that he will have a seat at the table for baseball operations, but he will not be at the head of the table. And so he wants the baseball ops president to be the primary decision maker, which has me excited, because you figure if there's a president of baseball ops and a GM underneath him, it will go GM, president, team president Alderson, Cohen. And I feel like if you can get past Sandy Alderson, I can't imagine Cohen saying no.
Yeah.
Like that level of having that strict of a hierarchy, I feel like will lead Cohen to be able to really trust his people. Because Alderson's as bulletproof as an executive gets, essentially. And so I think if you have multiple people going up the chain to Alderson, that has to make everybody feel pretty good about the chain.
Yeah. Well, and I think Cohen said the key is to hire people smarter than you. So I feel like, you know, like you said, if there are a bunch of people smarter than him, then he'll believe anything that they need his, like, final say on.
Yeah. You know, he did say, somebody asked him, they used the term that Scott Boras had used, saying, what aisle will the Mets be shopping in this offseason? And his answer was, we're going to make sure we've got meat and potatoes, but we're going to be shopping in the gourmet section as well. And then pointed out he needed directions to find the gourmet aisle.
Oh, so much shade.
Yes, exactly. But the,
oh, it's amazing. To me, we stand.
The key quote came right after that. He said, it's not about how much less we can get someone for. It's about getting that somebody. We can now emphasize the acquisition rather than the cost.
Oh my God. That's great.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
good. It's like he went, quote.
Yeah. It's like he went in like, how much shade could I throw?
Yeah. And the last sort of bit he said was that the Mets minor league affiliates next year will be St. Lucie, Brooklyn, Binghamton, and Syracuse. We had thought Binghamton was going away. So that's a good thing for fans in the Northeast. It means that both Columbia and Kingsport are no longer Mets affiliates, which is a shame. No one likes to hear about minor league contraction, but unfortunately that's the case. But I think for Mets fans to have high A, double A, and triple A in the state, that's a really nice thing.
Yeah, that is really cool. It's funny because, like, for once, it's weird when I was like paying attention to like what they were doing with minor league contraction. Obviously, like you said, Brian, like the thing as a whole is like really devastating for baseball. But as far as like specific teams I was paying attention to, I was actually paying attention more to the Yankees affiliates than the Mets because
I worked
in Trenton for, right, you know, for a year. And so I popped over to a lot of Trenton Thunder games like after work. And it is kind of devastating in a way that the Trenton Thunder is going away. It was an institution there, but at the same time, I was like, I had mixed feelings about it because I was really sad about the departure of Trenton. But on the other hand, I was pretty psyched because they're moving the affiliate to Somerset, which was always my like closest to where I'm from. Because I grew up with a lot of Somerset Patriots games, which is like independent league and not affiliated. But, you know, just for Somerset to have affiliated baseball is pretty cool.
Well, can I just say I'm also very sad they bought the Renegades?
Yes. Yeah, devastating. Also.
I feel dirty cheering for the Renegades now. My poor Gades.
I get it. It's tough.
It is.
But yeah, I mean, it means that I will probably get to, and they haven't said yet if Brooklyn is double A or single A. They seem to think it's going to be double A. I've read some rumblings that they feel that double A is where Brooklyn will be. And That's really fun, actually.
Oh yeah, because they would be so much closer.
Yeah, and so what you'll do, you'll see a lot of Mets rehabbing there too.
Yeah, which is cool.
So that's always a fun thing. So overall, just a really positive, really fun press conference. It ran like an hour and a half, which I thought was kind of crazy. But people wanted to. I mean, every reporter not named Brian Salvatore was on that call. Which was a bummer because like they pulled out every two-bit Mets writer except for Amazing Avenue. But, you know, maybe next time.
Rude.
Yeah
come on.
Rude.
We got to tweet at Steve Cohen 2 or Stephen A. Cohen 2.
Yeah, exactly. But so
one last thing about the press conference because
sure.
I just wanted to, since I didn't watch it, was it Bradford that asked the question about to Steve Cohen about like the social justice stuff?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think that was Bradford because I remember like I saw a couple of tweets about it, and because I was kind of like not only did I not see the presser live, I was not, unlike Linda, I was not like following online along either because like it was just a hellacious day at work and I was like really busy, and so I had to catch up on everything after the fact, so I like missed a lot of stuff that like went through live, and I was like, I remember like seeing a tweet and flagging it in my brain like, oh yeah, like Bradford asked that question, I know it was Bradford.
I am 90% sure it was Bradford.
Yep.
Yeah,
good on him.
Yeah.
And one last final thought I had, too, because sure. I think Chris tweeted it, but it was something that I think we were all overthinking, right? You know, that press conference was the most interaction that they've had with the press than, like, the Wilpons in the past 20 years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Chris and I were texting during it, and I said to him, I think this is more time than... I think Cohen has already spent more time with the press than the Wilpons have in the 21st century.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Which is insane. Because it's 20 years in and he's had one press conference. You know, here we are.
He says good or bad, he's going to, you know, stay the same. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. So that was Tuesday. And then Wednesday, today at 5 p.m., was the deadline for players to accept or reject a qualifying offer from the team. And your friend and mine, Marcus Stroman, accepted the Mets qualifying offer.
Yes! Stroman's back!
He specifically cited Cohen as a reason for doing that, which is, again, just if that's all Cohen gives us... He's already given us more than the Wilpons did in the last few years. The QO is for $18.9 million for the season, which our friend Vass pointed out makes him the third highest salaried player on the club right now.
Wow.
That's insane. I do think that he might be an extension candidate now that he's already signed.
Yes.
He did say, like, haters are going to see me for a while or something. So yeah. I was like, ooh, a while? What does that mean, Stro? Do elaborate.
Yeah, so
he said something about sticking around for a while, and I was like,
Yeah, like your eyebrows go up, like, ooh.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is a hugely important move for 2021.
Yes, you know, because they had no rotation that all to speak of behind DeGrom.
They have Jacob DeGrom. They maybe have David Peterson in the 3, 4, or 5 slot, depending how much you believe in Peterson. But now you have three players that I think, and no offense to Allison's boo, Seth Lugo here, but you know, I think now you have three starters that you don't... You have two starters you don't have to worry about, and a third starter you can dream on.
Yeah.
And I think I just think Lugo is destined to go back to the bullpen.
My official Lugo take, copyright at this time, is I think it is, I mean, obviously it's dependent on like what the Mets are able to do during the rest of the offseason. And like, obviously, like, they shouldn't like save a spot for Lugo and we can't sign more pitchers because that would push Lugo out of the rotation. Like that would be ridiculous. But my official take TM is that I think it would be perfectly acceptable for Lugo to begin the season as the fifth starter. And then once Syndergaard comes back, he can get bumped back to the bullpen.
Okay.
That's reasonable. Yeah.
Okay.
I just think that's like an acceptable state of events. I'm not saying it like should be the state of events. I'm just saying I think it's an acceptable thing because that would mean that the Mets only have to sign one more pitcher, really, and then they would have a rotation of DeGrom, Stroman, insert pitcher here, David Peterson, and then like Seth Lugo. But then later it's Noah Syndergaard instead.
Well, apparently Max is working out with Regan in Florida. But who knows? The vulture is coming in to save us again.
My take is still that he should be non-tendered. And I feel bad about saying that.
I do too. Just,
he basically seems like not a baseball player anymore.
Where did it all go so wrong?
Well, here's the thing, right? If money really isn't an issue, then I think you keep Mats around for one more season.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
But I also...
You can't rely on him either, though.
No. To me, he is the sixth or seventh starter on the team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe the long man. Maybe you work some bullpen magic with him and let him be the seventh inning guy or sixth inning guy. I just don't know. But, you know, to me, Stroman accepting the QO just makes the Mets offseason a lot more clear.
Yes.
You know, they need help at catcher. Alderson also joked, by the way, that some of the Mets' defensive problems were his fault, which was
yeah,
amazing.
I did see that.
he's not wrong.
Yeah. So you
which
know,
is big of him to admit, and it is true.
Yes, big. Yes, exactly. So I think you're going to see a center fielder. I think you're going to see a catcher. And now I think you don't need to necessarily go out and get a Trevor Bauer, thank goodness.
Yes, praise be.
Thank you for saving us, Stroman.
Yeah, so I think DeGrom plus Stroman is very different than DeGrom plus no one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For obvious
DeGrom
reasons.
Plus, let's hope David Peterson is good.
Yes.
For realsies.
Yes. Like, so we'll see.
I think that, like, I'm going to try to, like, give a level-headed take on the Bauer situation. I mean, my non-level-headed take is I'm thrilled with this qualifying offer for many reasons, not just because I love Marcus Stroman, but because I think that this lowers Bauer on their priority list if he was there to begin with, which is, you know, good for me because I don't want Trevor Bauer anywhere near my team. But even from a baseball perspective, from a purely baseball perspective, even if he was not the asshole that he is, I think that taking Stroman off the table now raises Bauer's price tag
yes.
quite a
yes.
lot.
Yes.
Because basically it was like Bauer was the, in the eyes of the free agent market, Bauer was the one, especially now that he's won the Cy Young Award, which I guess we'll get to. Bauer was the
we
one.
We just got to it. That's it.
Yep, that's it.
He won the Cy Young. Jake didn't. Boo.
That occurred.
Moving on.
Bauer was the one, and Stroman was the 1A, so to speak, and the backup plan for many teams who were like had a big hole in their rotation. They wanted to fill it with the best pitcher available that they could. If they did not win the Bauer sweepstakes, they probably would have been in on the Marcus Stroman sweepstakes. Now Marcus Stroman's off the table. So that kind of leaves it at like Bauer, and then there's like a huge drop in talent after that. And so for me, if you're the Mets, like why involve yourself in that rat race at all now?
Well, and also I think we can't overlook Morton. I don't think he was a free agent the last time we potted because the Rays declined. Or
yeah.
Yeah, so I would take Morton in a heartbeat, and he probably won't cost that much. And they said I think he wants to stay on the East Coast, so I think he would be a fine 3-4 behind Jake and Stroman, Morton, Peterson, and then I guess Lugo, and then you're fine until Syndergaard comes back.
I would think that, first of all, I think the Mets are going to be very active on the trade market this year because I think for the first time in a long time.
No, that means my mans might be trade bait. Well, don't say that.
One of their corner outfield / like corner infield types.
Yes. Whether that is Davis or Dom Nimmo. Smith or Nimmo. Or even Alonso. I could see Alderson being much higher on Smith than Alonso and thinking you're never going to get a higher value for a player
than
you are.
Did he draft both of them?
He did.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he did. I think, I agree with you, Brian. I think that the Mets do have, you know, they do have a position of strength to trade from there. And I think that, you know, I think we might see that play out if they prioritize Springer. It's wild, like kind of like looping back to the Stroman qualifying offer. The thing that I find like striking about this is that all the fans are just able to celebrate this, whereas a good player coming back, an enjoyable player, a fun player coming back. Whereas in the past, if this were any offseason prior to this one and something and Stroman accepted the qualifying offer, that would have been disastrous for the Mets.
Because this would have been the move.
Would have been the move. Oh, and then we would have spent the whole rest of the offseason talking about how the whole offseason budget is spent, but no one is saying that at all. And it's so awesome. We can just like talk about like what other holes do we have to fill? Should we sign JT Realmuto or George Springer? Por que no los dos? It's like wow.
We would have had to hope that they like signed Chris Archer and hope he rebounded.
Yeah, right. That would have been like the other big move. Because which is literally what happened. We got like literally Rick Porcello. But I think that, I really want to dream big. I would love for them to sign JT Realmuto and George Springer, but I think that it's kind of going to be a pick one situation. And if that is true, then I think they should prioritize Realmuto, in my opinion, because I think the catcher is the biggest need. Like, obviously, center field, like, Nimmo is not a viable center fielder at this point, but he can at least stand there. Yes. Whereas, like, a catcher, we have no solution right now.
See, really. I'm the opposite. I think they should go all in on Springer and maybe sign McCann as a backup. But then
I
if you
be
miss out,
pleased with that outcome, yeah, that's for sure.
But then if you miss out on both McCann and Realmuto, then come on down, Tomas Nito. You are now our starting catcher.
Well, that's kind of my point. I feel like the level of talent between Realmuto and the next choice is a drop-off. And then between McCann and the next choice is a huge drop-off. Whereas I feel like Springer, although he is clearly the center field option, if you're looking at trades and free agents, there is somebody there who is likely not the same level of drop-off than you get from the catching position. Because even if you're counting trades, I don't know who's better. I don't think there is a better catcher than Realmuto right now. I think that's it.
No, there's not.
So you don't not have a chance close. Often to sign the absolute best player at a position, especially when money isn't an option.
So, yeah.
So fucking go for it, man. Like, do this now.
Yeah. I think, but I do think that if they sign Springer as opposed to, like, and I'm not saying they have to go this far of a drop-off. It's just an example because we're familiar with it. As opposed to, like, a Mariznick-type place filler,
so to speak.
If they sign Springer, then I feel they almost have to trade someone. Like, probably, like, Nimmo or Davis. Sorry, Linda. I actually think Nimmo would be the bigger trade bait here, almost, because I think he would actually net you more. Although Davis has more years of team control, so there's that to take into account. But Nimmo is, I would say, the more flexible player, if not just the outright better player between those two players. And I think he could excel in another team. For sure. Like, what team wouldn't want Brandon Nimmo batting leadoff and playing left field every day for them? Like, that's a huge asset. I think you almost, if you do prioritize Springer, you almost have to trade one of your other, like, corner outfield types, because they need to use that that surplus to get starting pitching.
Because
that opens up more options as far as, like, filling it with, like, because the starting pitching, like, free agency crop is not that great. And so, like, being able to open up an option to trade for one is, like, gives you a lot more options.
Well, here's my question, though. If the National League keeps the DH for next year, which we don't know yet, I think that changes their offseason plan considerably.
For sure.
Considerably, because, like, yes, if you
I
could,
think that takes Dom Smith off the table, then.
I think so, too. Although, theoretically, you could have Cano play, you could have Cano be the DH, have McNeil at second, and have Davis at third.
Although I saw, I think, like, in Slack today, they were debating Lindor trades. And they said, maybe you can include McNeil and then sign LeMahieu.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I was like, ooh, I kind of like that.
I would not complain about having DJ LeMahieu on our team. That's for sure.
I would not either. And Francisco Lindor.
That's Lindor.
I am less sold on the Lindor trade. And that's not because of Lindor as a player. I just think that if you're looking at all the positions the Mets need help at, shortstop is so far down my list that I would rather the resources be utilized elsewhere.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, because if they have the chips to trade, might as well trade it for a pitcher of an equivalent caliber.
Yes.
And then you could really get the bang for your buck that way. But I don't know. I just... love Francisco Lindor.
I mean, there's no guarantee Lindor, after he gets traded, will sign an extension. Then he'll be a free agent next year anyway.
That's the thing for it to work. You have to.
Yes.
Well, yeah, for the Mets, yeah. But, like, what if another team just sees them as a rental, like a cuspy kind of team? Like a team less poor than the Mets, now that I can say that.
Holy shit, Linda.
Wow.
Holy shit, Linda. To me, also, like, Lindor is, I mean, for those of us that have been Mets fans for some time, Lindor was like the dream get for 8 years now?
Yeah.
7 years now? Whatever it was. Like, you know, he's just, he's been that oh, we got to trade for Lindor. We got to trade for this guy. Name forever. And I think in some ways we're reacting to the fact that we can actually do that now.
I know. The immediate successor to Tulo Avenue is Lindor Avenue.
Absolutely. 100%.
Well, and also Baez is a free agent next year too.
Oh, damn. Javi Baez is so fun.
So we have options here, guys.
Well, that's the whole thing. I think that we're so used to the way, and again, not to make this Wilpon Avenue audio, but like the way the Wilpons ran the team, we've been conditioned to like, all right, this offseason we can do one big thing. And so let's do that one big thing. Look, we've got two above average young shortstops right now. Just let that sink in for a second here. We have two above average young shortstops here. And so we don't have to... Shortstops will be available in the future, and if these guys don't work out, we have time to address that. And that won't have to be the move next offseason. That can be a move.
The one like sort of counterpoint to that Lindor is that from the Mets perspective, because I have seen like, because I made a tweet fairly recently about like, because someone like tweeted a Lindor rumor. It wasn't a real rumor. It was just like the Mets, Lindor, blah. And I was like, oh, I would love to have Francisco Lindor. And I got like a few people being like, but why with Ahmed Rosario and Andrés Giménez? And I was like, yes, I understand that. And this isn't a diss on either of those players. I like them both. But the thing about like getting Lindor and that might put us ahead in the ability to acquire Lindor is that we can trade Cleveland back a major league ready shortstop to fill their hole that they've now created there, which gives us a leg up on other teams that might be interested.
Yeah.
That is true. Yeah.
Because, like, I think if you trade for Lindor, you trade one of those two players in said trade.
You have to.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah.
And I think that, unfortunately, the player you don't trade is not going to play a lot for a little while.
Yeah.
Which is
unless you do an Ahmed Rosario or center field experiment, which I've been saying they should try forever and ever.
Or you also trade Smith and this makes Cano the full-time DH.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the Mets have possibilities, which is new.
Yeah,
it is. Just a little bit of money just changes everything.
It does.
Let's be real. More than a little bit of money.
Yeah, a lot of money.
Well, we saw the ownership change was in for the Dodgers. Will that be us? Who knows?
Yeah. Would love to see it.
You sure
they're
would.
World Series champions now.
Yes. With an asterisk. I'm not going to recognize them.
Are you also not recognizing Bauer?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, good, good. I would hope not.
I mean, Bauer cheated and admitted he cheated, so.
That's true.
And he faced like shit competition all year, so enjoy your. I made this comparison. He's basically going to be Rick Porcello in a couple years, where you're like, oh, right, that dude won a Cy Young, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, here's the thing. I mean, like, I was actually talking to my dad about this on the phone earlier today because I called him when I found out that Stroman took the qualifying offer to be like, yay. And so we talked about this a little bit, and he was saying, like, even from. And again, we're talking even from a strictly baseball perspective, we agree neither of us want Trevor Bauer anywhere near our team. But like even from a strictly baseball perspective, not just his price tag will rise a lot, but like at the price tag he's now going to be, given that Stroman is like out of the free agent market, that's going to be like borderline like DeGrom Scherzer level money. And like he has had one good season. One.
He had 11 good starts.
One, yeah, like he had like half a good season, and like I'm not, you know, like cheating or not, it was good. Like he had good numbers. He, you know, based on the numbers, he deserved the. No one that wasn't me who said that. But like you want the track record when you're giving out a contract like that. Yes. I'm happy to, like, I mean, ain't my money, so like who cares? Give out $100 million contracts all you want, multiple hundreds of millions of dollars. But like, to me, like DeGrom and Scherzer, they like those sorts of Justin Verlander, like they have track records of being aces for multiple years before they got that their deals. Like Bauer is not even close to that level. He's not even, I would argue he hasn't even earned the Zach Wheeler contract because Zach Wheeler had more of a track record of success. Obviously he didn't have like a Cy Young season yet, but he had like a season and a half of like being very good under his belt when he was signed to the contract he got signed to.
I'm a little older than you guys, so I'm not sure if this is going to necessarily land the same way. I could see Bauer getting a Kevin Brown contract.
Oh, yeah.
And then totally not living up to
it. Turning into Kevin Brown.
Yes, exactly. Just the full Kevin Brown experience.
Yeah, I would love to see it and for not the Mets.
Yeah, I'm convinced he's going to turn back into a pumpkin and throw a temper tantrum when he can't handle everybody saying, oh, you're not living up to that contract. It's going to be a nightmare for whatever team.
That would be so satisfying when that happens.
Yeah. So one interesting wrinkle of this Stroman story, though, is that yesterday, I believe it was, Stroman had tweeted that there was a team he would not sign with before he accepted the Mets qualifying offer. And that team was the Chicago White Sox. The White Sox, who many would say were one of the more exciting and fun teams in baseball in 2020, hired Tony La Russa to be their manager. Now, La Russa managed them back in the day. And La Russa, I think if you can remove any personal feelings you may have, La Russa is a clear Hall of Fame. He's in the Hall of Fame, as he will remind you over and over again, even when you're an arresting officer. You know, he is a Hall of Fame caliber manager, but he's also somebody who has not managed in some time and seems to be on the more old fashioned side of baseball thought. He was, to my knowledge, most recently working for the Diamondbacks he worked for Major League Baseball for a while, but he was, you know, he was involved in the Diamondbacks front office, and that did not go very well.
No, he's responsible for the Shelby Miller trade that just handed the Braves Ender Inciarte and Dansby Swanson. So we can thank him for that.
Yes. And, you know, the reason that this came up with Stroman is that shortly, I guess it was during spring training, La Russa was arrested for a DUI and did things like pointed to his World Series ring and said, do you know who I am? I'm in the Baseball Hall of Fame. I'm big time. Like he basically hot dogged it to a cop, which is, you know, not cool for a lot
extremely
of reasons.
Draco Malfoy, my father will hear about this energy.
Yes. But also just like, you know,
or I'm the cake boss. Somebody
says, I'm the cake
Linda,
boss.
I love you so much for saying I'm the cake boss. My goodness. Oh, that's the greatest thing I've heard all day. Yes, Tony La Russa is the I'm the cake boss of baseball.
Can we title this episode I'm the cake boss?
100%.
Good.
I was going to make it the Cohen Stroh show, but now it's going to be I'm the cake boss.
No, it has to be I'm the cake boss.
Oh, man. You just made my night with that comment. But you know, but so, you know, I feel like people of a certain age older than us think about drunk driving in a way that is different than how we think about drunk driving. I think it was a more acceptable thing. Not that it should have ever been, but I think people don't think of it as being as big of a deal as maybe folks our age think it is. And fuck those people, because it's a terrible, terrible thing. There's no, in the age of Uber and Lyft, there is literally zero reason to ever drive drunk. Well, not that there was beforehand, but there's even less of a reason now.
Well, yeah, and somebody pointed it out. He's had players die from drunk driving, which makes it 10 times worse. Like, you know what the consequences are. You've had players die from this. and you still made the choice to do it.
Yeah, that is
somebody... It was a bad hire. It was a disastrous hire before, and this makes it exponentially worse.
Yes.
And they never... And then White Sox knew, and they hired him anyway. Yeah.
That's the worst part.
And they didn't issue any statements saying we you know, drunk driving is wrong, he's getting help. Nothing. It's been like radio silence from them, which, like, I know this is all Reinsdorf or however the hell you pronounce his name. And, like, that's just handcuffing the entire organization. But look, it already cost you a free agent. Is it worth it? Is Tony La Russa worth all this?
And, like, I don't know, not to belabor this point and get on my soapbox about it, but, like, Carlos Beltran faced more consequences for being tangentially involved in the Astros cheating scandal than this guy is going to face.
Yep. Well,
for according actual, to like endangering people's lives.
Yeah, nothing matters in baseball anymore. You can cheat, you can drunk drive, and you'll face zero consequences. Like Cora and Hinch both got jobs. La Russa's keeping his job. Like, there's no consequences to literally anything you do.
And it was just like, and like I remember when, and this was before the news of the DUI came out. Like, I remember like when the hire was announced, and like obviously most of the people that I interact with on baseball Twitter are like Mets folks, but like obviously I follow like a few folks from across baseball, and so like I follow a few White Sox fans, and like they were devastated. Mm-hmm. And it's just like such a feeling of solidarity, because this feels so Wilpon Metsy.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
A guy that's familiar to the organization and like old school.
Yeah.
Like,
it just,
and I was like, on one hand, this is all really terrible, and I feel like a massive amount of sympathy for White Sox fans right now. But on the other hand, like, God, it's so nice that this isn't us anymore.
Yes.
Well, as somebody said, like, now if the Wilpon's out, is Reinsdorf the worst? I was like, yeah, sorry.
Was it Nick Schaefer who used the best term to describe it? It was like a hackish family owned business. It was so good. I wish I could find it. It's probably too far back.
I can't remember what he said, but yeah.
He described it perfectly. He was like, with the Wilpons out now, is Reinsdorf the like most hackish, terrible owner in the sport? And everyone was like, yeah, probably.
Yeah. Sorry.
See, I always think of him as the Bulls owner from like the Last Dance days. You know, he's owned the Bulls forever, and so I think of him as like this guy who builds legacies, right? But that was a long time ago, and that was a different sport. And yeah, just the thing about La Russa that bothers me so much too is that I cannot imagine a world in which La Russa is anything more than a one or two season solution for that team. He's old as fuck. He hasn't had a good managerial season since the Cardinals in God knows when, and it just seems to me like it's such a short-sighted move, especially for a team that is this young and exciting. Like, when they hired him, was the explicit purpose to make that team less fun?
Yeah, right. I think I said at the time that they hired him, I'm trying to imagine Tony La Russa trying to have a conversation with Tim Anderson, and I'm failing to imagine.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm failing to imagine like how they would even interact.
Well, and the best part too was Renteria was a finalist for Manager of the Year. I think he lost to Kevin Cash, but that just would have been the cherry on top if he won.
Yeah, it's just so silly.
Yeah, like, why did you take such like a fun team and just kill its soul, basically?
Is there any better argument for what's wrong with baseball owners than that exact situation? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, here's the exact quote from Nick of Baseball Perspectives, who is a White Sox fan. This has to be the most embarrassing mom and pop baseball weirdo operation left in the game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was basically like, it was in response to a reply he got that says, is Reinsdorf going to be the clown prince of baseball with the Wilpons out? Feel like there's a compelling argument to be made. And he was like, yeah, I was talking to people about this earlier. This has to be the most embarrassing mom and pop baseball weirdo operation left in the game.
Also, shout out to Clown Prince of Baseball.
Yes. Yeah, Clown Prince of Baseball. So, like, yeah, like, it sucks, and I definitely am sympathetic to White Sox fans right now. It's just, like, why do these dudes keep getting jobs?
It just seems to me like this reeks of, let's go back to the... You know, there's a quote from a Puccini opera that says, let's go back to the past, at least that will be progress. And it's in the, I believe in the opera, it is meant as like a foolish person saying it, but you'll hear people pull that out a lot of times as like a, yes, we're doing something, we're going back to the old days. But like, no, it's bad to go back to the old days. You're never going to recapture what you had with La Russa the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that quote, like, they're parodying you people. Don't you understand that?
Yeah, like, this is not a good thing. And it's, you know, it's just, I'm glad it's not the Mets, but I do feel for White Sox fans.
Yeah. Been there.
So the last time you folks recorded was right before this next news item happened. So Allison, I'm going to let you take the reins on this segment here and talk about our old friend, Justin Turner.
Yeah, so speaking of baseball clownery, I guess as we'll put it, other clownery occurred. So yeah, the last time Linda and I recorded, I believe, was literally the evening which this happened, but it was like we were recording at 8:30 at night, and yeah, it was after the World Series game much later in the evening. But yeah, at the time, the Dodgers were and the Rays were playing in the World Series. The Dodgers won the World Series. We found out it was just like, it was wild to like kind of watch it all. I mean, I didn't watch the game on TV, but it was wild to like be awake on Twitter, like seeing it all unfold step by step, because it was like, oh, the game is happening, like World Series, ah. And then like all of a sudden it was like, Justin Turner is pulled from the game inexplicably in the second inning. Okay, whatever, back to baseball. Like, no one said why. So it was like, okay, maybe he's hurt. And then, like, the game continues to happen. Dodgers win the World Series. Wow, first World Series since 1988. This is crazy. And everyone's celebrating. All the Dodgers fans are very excited. And then, like, all of a sudden, it's like, Justin Turner has COVID. Like, immediately after the game ended, they were like, Turner has COVID. And then all of a sudden, you see him, like, after we heard that he has COVID, you see him like emerge from the dugout and you're like, what is happening? What we did? They just said he has COVID. And he's out there taking pictures with the team and celebrating. And it turns out that he's
down.
Masked down. Yeah. Like he like came out with his mask on, but then like when they started taking the pictures, he like pulled it down to take the pictures. And it's like, are you crazy? And like all these, yeah, like, and then all of a sudden all this news came out that like he had gotten in like an uncertain COVID test, like an inconclusive COVID test at first, and so they tested him again, and then he tested positive, and that's when they pulled him from the game and asked him to isolate, but he just like didn't listen and decided he wanted to be out there to celebrate because he's a selfish prick. So that's what happened, and it was just like, I felt a lot of like emotions like seeing that, and it felt really like emblematic of how the country is dealing with this pandemic, of just like, you know, I don't, like a big shrug emoji more or less of like, I don't really care, I'll do what I want, this is America. Like, it just felt very like that. And people, there was a lot of back and forth on Twitter, and especially in the aftermath after the statements were released by the Dodgers, Rob Manfred in the commissioner's office, and Justin Turner himself. And there was just a lot of like, it was basically the Spider-Man's pointing at each other meme. It was like, yeah, like everybody's deflecting blame at the other party. And I saw a lot of like, well, you know, like baseball should take responsibility, he's just one player. And then I saw a lot of like, well, what's baseball supposed to do if Justin Turner wants to do what he wants to do, personal responsibility? And I'm like, why can't it be both? Like, yeah, they both utterly failed in this situation. Baseball failed to take control of the situation, and they failed in their COVID protocols in the first place. This isn't just an isolated incident. They failed altogether to deal with this pandemic properly. And Justin Turner failed to exercise any sort of proper judgment and put his teammates at risk. And they both deserve a massive amount of criticism for how this went down. Like, it's just unconscionably bad.
Well, and also, I love how he's like, I just wanted to talk about how I felt. Nobody gives a shit about your feelings, okay? How many people missed weddings? How many people missed funerals? How many people missed saying goodbye to loved ones because of this pandemic? But your feelings trump all that, really? Like, because you won the World Series? Again, it's the difference between the haves and the have-nots in this country. Like, the rich can do whatever they want. He gets to celebrate his trophy because it's a once-in-a-lifetime celebration. But the rest of us have to miss graduations. We have to miss weddings. We have to miss funerals. And Manfred thinks that's fine because he broke his protocols right in front of his face. Like, Manfred was there and did nothing to stop it.
And at the end of the day, Justin Turner, like, is still a World Series champion. I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't feel bad for him. He'll be fine. Yeah. He's getting a ring. It's fine. He should be proud of what he accomplished. But he doesn't have to be out there with his team, taking pictures, all that stuff, to feel proud about what he accomplished. He's going to have plenty emblems to celebrate that. His ring, his money. He gets to still enjoy his fame and fortune in the end. And it's fine. But again, like, it's a pretty flippant, like, way, attitude to deal with this when hundreds of thousands of people have died.
When he is a fat shithead at a baseball card show in 20 years, he can put World Series champion Justin Turner on his placard, no matter whether he's celebrated or not.
Yep. And also now 9 people have tested positive in the Dodgers organization. Congratulations,
Justin. Oh, it's up to 9
Justin.
Now?
Yep. And also, it's like people were like, oh, he was already with them, so it's fine. There were families on the field. There were kids on the field.
Right. Yep. There were additional people. Like, you can say what you want about his teammates and, oh, they were already exposed, yada, yada. But there were additional people that were exposed in the celebration.
Stadium workers, stadium security. Does
the fans,
care about
literal
the
fans.
But it's
fans
not just about
who shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Been there
who
anyway.
Shouldn't have been there. Yeah, but were there nonetheless. Yeah.
So it's not just about him and his teammates. And they're like, oh, yeah, we wanted him to celebrate with us. But again, where were you, Manfred? You were standing right there.
Yeah.
It's just absurd. It's upsetting. It just seems to me like this is such a perfect encapsulation of why we haven't been able to beat this virus.
Yep.
Is because we think that everything is more important than human life. Business is more important than human life. Normalcy is more important than human life. Revenues from selling fucking hot dogs at the World Series is more important than human life. And I can't fuck with that. I can't do that. That just seems to me to be so against everything important to me in my life. I can't imagine it, you know. And look, is it a bummer? Yes. And you know who would have had all the sympathy of the universe if he didn't celebrate? Justin Turner.
Yep.
Every single person would have said, wow, look what a good person he is. He could have violated this protocol, but he decided for the good of his teammates and the health of the people on the field that he was going to not do that. And they would have made a big deal about him next season, and he would have, you know, I'm thinking of, who was it? Who was the player that had the perfect game blown for him by Jim Joyce, the umpire? The Tiger?
I can picture him too.
I know, me too. But like, so when that happened, baseball like got him a Lambo or some shit. Like
Galarraga, right?
Yes, Galarraga. yes. Thank you. But like, baseball presented him with a car the next day, and they did this big deal for him because there was an injustice perpetrated upon him by the baseball gods. And Justin Turner would have had the exact same thing happen to him if he had been a grown up about it.
Yeah, and this is even like. Even if he had, like, because basically the implication, and I don't remember, like, which one, if it was, like, Turner himself or, like, who else, but, like, the implication is, like, oh, this COVID outbreak happened is because people left the bubble. And I feel like even if Turner had left the bubble but still stayed isolated during the World Series, people still would have felt bad for him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. He would have won in the court of public opinion for this. For the rest of his career. The rest of his life. He would never... As it stands, he'll probably never have to buy a drink in Los Angeles again. But if he had, quote, sacrificed his celebration for the good of the people, he'd be a folk legend.
Yeah. Well, and then they sent them home. It's like,
Why aren't they quarantining for 14 days before you put them on airplanes? So they're going to infect people we'll never even know at this point.
It's just so depressing.
It is.
It's upsetting. And it's like, this is why we can't have nice things.
This is why we're not going to have fans in the stands in 2021. Yeah.
Like,
and I don't mean to pull the I'm a dad card because I hate people who do that. But like, Justin Turner, you're a grown-ass man. Nobody should have to explain to you why you can't do something.
Yeah.
Literally every day I have to explain to my kids why we can't be doing the thing they want to be doing right now.
Right. Right.
Because they're 4 and 8.
Yeah, it's really hard to explain to kids, like, no, you can't hang out with your friends. I know it really sucks, but yeah, like, it's really hard for kids to understand why you can't. It shouldn't be hard for adults to understand. Yeah.
I don't know. I think kids are handling it better than the adults, honestly.
Yeah, to be real.
In a lot of ways, I think you're right, Linda.
Yeah. It's like, it's so upsetting. It's so upsetting. And again, like you said, Linda, it's the difference between the haves and have-nots. It's like the rich and powerful can get away with doing this because, like, who cares? They're rich. And
yeah, there was no punishment. Manfred's not issuing any punishment. Like, he said he was deeply disappointed. Yeah, great. I'm sure
Justin Turner's like really upset about that.
Yeah. Well, and I'm with you, Brian. Like, it's just getting exhausting just to see how careless we are with human life. It just wears on you seeing this just every day. Just like, oh, another 100,000 cases. Oh, well.
So about 2 weeks ago, I had gone with my family there's a diner in my neighborhood that has a lot of outdoor seating. And so we went for breakfast on a Saturday, and as I was paying the bill, I asked the owner who was working the register, like, oh, how long are you guys going to keep the outdoor seating up? He's like, well, technically we have to have it down by November 30th, rather. But, you know, this is all going away on the day after the election, so it's not going to be a big deal anyway.
Ugh.
And I was like, oh, please don't say that. I said, well, cases are high. He goes, yeah, but deaths aren't. You know, this is all going away. And I just feel like as long as there's people who truly believe that this is not a big deal, we're going to keep running into situations like this.
Yep.
Yep. It's just not going to stop.
Like, I just talked to my parents today about how my brother decided he's not coming for Thanksgiving, and I don't blame him.
Like, no.
And because my brother, for reference, my brother lives in Vermont, which is basically, like, the only COVID-free place in the country right now. And so, like, he is basically like, I am never leaving my house. Like, I am staying here because, like, we have the luxury of being able to live, like, fairly, like, still obviously, like, masks everywhere, like, also, like, sanitizing hands, everything. But, like, they have the luxury of actually being able to do some more things than everybody else because they locked it down when they were supposed to, and everyone actually listened. Yeah. And so now, like, they have, like, I remember, like, we were there, like, visiting him back in, I can't remember when it was, but it was, like, they had, like, 4 new cases that day. And I was like, oh, must be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we basically had to decide between, do we go for Thanksgiving and see my in-laws, who are two, there's two of them, but they're both immunocompromised, or my mom, who lives by herself but is a little bit healthier. And we had to, like, debate this as a couple.
Yep.
And yeah, you know, it breaks my heart. We should be able to see, you know, if in any other country, we could be seeing both of them on Thanksgiving. And it wouldn't be a problem.
Yep.
It's the same thing with us. We usually go to my aunt's house in New Jersey for Thanksgiving. And with gathering, both New York and New Jersey said no gatherings over 10 people. Yeah. We're not going to my aunt's house. So we're just going to do, like, my immediate family at my mom's house instead. But, yeah, oh, look at that. We're sacrificing instead of just rushing over to see my aunt instead, because Thanksgiving's only a once-in-a-year opportunity.
And not only that, Linda, but, like, you know, both of us are talking about things that, Like, I am still nervous about having Thanksgiving with one of these families.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I still think even just immediate family, it's still a somewhat dangerous thing. And I am, you know, I think we're all mourning reality. We're all mourning normalcy, right? We're all mourning tradition and all of that. But we're also still trying to be smart about it. And I think for some people, tradition trumps health, and I can't fucking understand that. I just can't.
Yeah, it blows my mind.
I went out to eat last Friday, and I felt guilty. Like, you know, it just felt weird. And, you know, if I did have a huge gathering, I would never be able to live with myself. I would just feel awful, and I would feel like, you know, what if I got somebody sick, or, you know, it just takes just a little bit of consideration for your fellow man, like your neighbors, your friends, your loved ones. It's really, yeah, like you said, it sucks, but how else is it ever going to end?
And also,
weird culture around like sports fans with this, and like not just baseball fans, like sports fans in general, is like, I don't think that like the idea that like anybody who takes this seriously and thinks that we shouldn't have had the baseball season is being like a big party pooper or something. Like, I still don't think we should have had this baseball season. And no. Like, I am as like, we are as dedicated of fans. We love baseball as much as anybody that you know, but like, we also are not ignorant to the reality. And we understand that people's lives matter more than this game.
This just strikes me as people who have never had a single thing go wrong in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, like, so in case anybody is ignorant to my last name, I'm Italian. And Christmas Eve is like the big holiday for my family. There's 40 people around an oversized dinner table, and nobody can hear anything because we're all yelling. And, you know, it's stereotype junction is what it is. But I love it. And a couple of years ago, both my wife and son got sick on Christmas Eve. They both had a stomach bug. And I decided to stay home with them and cook for them and be with them because I felt that it was unfair for me to leave two sick people at home. And did it suck? Yes. I kept waiting for, like, I really hoped my brother would think of us and, like, drop us off dessert or something. It didn't happen. Sorry, Mark. I love you, but you weren't very thoughtful that day. But, you know, like, I was waiting. But it was this really bad holiday because I missed my family so much. But you know what? I got over it because I'm a fucking adult. And yes. I know it'll happen again. And that wasn't the last time that family will ever gather. And so just buck up, people. Come on. I'm sorry. I'm getting hot.
Yeah.
No, it's
I had exactly one beer. Call 911.
Yeah, call 911.
No, the selfishness is just, it's tiring. Like everything we did, like, especially here in New York, how much we all, and New Jersey, how much we all went through and how much we all sacrificed, and the rest of the country just spat on it. It's disheartening.
And like, they gave up halfway through.
Yep.
Like, in New York and New Jersey, the leadership, not the people necessarily, but like, you know, it's frustrating because I lived in New Jersey I was a New Jersey resident during the beginning of COVID, and I'm a DC resident now. But like, it was like heartening to watch New Jersey like deal with this and like flatten their curve and like really put it under control, similar to New York City. And then like the second that they got close, they were like, okay, we're done. And they just like started opening everything again. And I was like, no, like, it's not how this works. Like, and now it's back to being terrible.
Yeah, and they've given up trying.
But yeah, they've given up trying. And like, you know, it's the de Blasio tweet today.
Oh,
got
my God.
A lot of flack, like, you know, understandably so. Like, I think it was Vaz that was like, because it was basically like de Blasio like gave some COVID stats, like some, you know, sobering COVID stats, and was like, you know, we have to act now to prevent a second wave. And Vaz was like, gee, if only this de Blasio fellow were in a position to act.
It's like, I know, that was so perfect.
It was a perfect tweet. I was like, exactly. Like, the leadership has been really disheartening. And obviously it starts from the very top, but hopefully that will change.
Yes.
The new administration.
Yeah, well, what a wild day last Friday was.
Yes.
It was.
Yeah. Just absolutely bonkers. Well, so because we have combined our two shows, we're going to do both of our sort of last segments, starting with our music recommendations, which is something Chris and I do every week. So do you guys want me to go first to kick this off or what?
Sure.
Okay.
You go first.
All right. So last night, my poor dog, Buster, all 11 pounds of fury, he had some sort of stomach bug, and so he was not feeling well.
Oh,
and
no.
So, and he's okay now, but because of that, my wife and I were sort of taking shifts staying awake to make sure he was going to be okay. And so I was scrolling on my phone, as of course you do when you can't sleep, and Facebook blew my fucking mind by recommending a friend to me that I have not seen in 25 years, somebody I've never emailed with. So I don't know how I didn't know how they knew I knew this person. Turns out we have a mutual friend I didn't know we had in common. But this person was in the first ever band I was in when I was in eighth grade. He was the singer.
Oh,
and I was
my
the
God.
Guitar player. And so I was thinking about eighth grade, and that the first performance I ever had in public was we played a Stone Temple Pilots song at the Creskill Junior Senior High School talent show. And so my pick this week is Stone Temple Pilots' Purple, their second album, which to eighth grade Brian would have been like the best album ever made. I have not listened to it in a couple of years, but I have a lot of fond memories of it. And I listened to the song tonight. It's called Unglued, track 10, I believe, on the album. And it just brought me instantly back to being a really shitty guitar player in a really shitty band. I'm not going to tell you guys the name of the band because it's so embarrassing. But I will tell you the second name of the band. So we had a shitty, embarrassing name at our first performance. And like a month later, we had our second performance. And the drummer who came up with the first shitty name didn't like it anymore and wanted to give us a second name. And so he wanted the name to be Twisted Fate, which is like the lamest fucking name in the universe. But we were playing at this like Armenian church talent show, and they fucked it up in the program and wrote it as Twisted Fat, which is even worse of a name. It's just absolutely terrible. So in honor of Twisted Fat, my pick is Stone Temple Pilots Purple.
That's amazing.
I love that so much.
So Allison, what's your music pick tonight?
So I feel like I am going to go. So my music pick and my, I've decided I'm going with the music pick I thought I was going to go with. So my music pick and my walk-off win are like connected to each other.
Do you want the last then? Do you want Linda to go now?
Yeah, so you can, I would prefer to go last because I think that they segue.
Okay.
So my music pick for this week, it's kind of timely. I'm flipping through the channels the other day, and the movie Oh Brother Where Art Thou was on.
Very nice.
And it's such a good movie if you haven't seen it. And the album for that, I think, won like Grammys. I think it won like, I think maybe it even won like for best album or something. Like, the music is just amazing. It's like old timey and like, because it takes place in the 30s. So there's a lot of like soulful music and just, it's every range that you could possibly think of from the 1930s. And the main song is Man of Constant Sorrow, which is Jacob deGrom's favorite movie too. And I feel like Man of Constant Sorrow kind of fits with Jacob deGrom.
Yeah, for real.
So that's probably my music for this week, because Jake's probably not very happy for this right now.
He's that is always a fantastic pick, a fantastic movie and album for sure.
Yeah, like I can't, if you know, even if you don't listen to the album, absolutely watch a movie, because George Clooney's clearly having the time of his life in the main role.
Yes, he is.
Okay, so I decided that I will do, because my music pick is connected to my walk-off win, I'll do a more serious music pick and then my silly music pick that's connected to my walk-off win. Okay. My actual more serious music pick, and this is simultaneously kind of like Linda, it's a soundtrack, so it's also a show recommendation. So Michael and I recently watched, after we finished rewatching Avatar The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra on Netflix, which we are huge fans of, and both those shows hit Netflix recently, so it gave us an excuse to rewatch it. For Avatar, I think it was like my like fifth rewatch of that series, but I had never rewatched Korra before, so that was good, and we enjoyed that. But then afterwards, we were like, what do we watch now? Because we like to have like a mix of something like more lighthearted to pair with like the more serious TV show we're watching, to sort of be like, you know, if we need a break from like the heavy stuff that we're watching or the drama, we can like watch a cartoon or something. So we had been like going through like things, like basically an article that was like things that you'll like if you like Avatar The Last Airbender. And what came up was, the first thing that came up was The Dragon Prince, which is a show that was the creators of Avatar, one of the creators of Avatar The Last Airbender is involved in. And so I was like, yeah, heck yeah, let's watch this show. And first of all, I loved this show. It was great. So I highly recommend the show, especially if you're into like cartoons and fantasy and things. Highly recommend The Dragon Prince. But one of the things about the show that I didn't expect that I would really love is the soundtrack. It's very beautiful. So like, I recommend that you listen to the soundtrack on Spotify or wherever you get your music from. It's really, really good. It's really beautiful. It's composed by Frederick Weidman. I don't exactly know how to pronounce it, but it's awesome. It's just so peaceful. I really enjoy listening to it in a similar way that I enjoy listening to the Harry Potter soundtrack. It just makes me feel like very at peace and calm, and it's like very calming music. So I really recommend that. My silly music pick is a song that it turns out, and I didn't actually know this, I'm kind of embarrassed that I didn't know this, but this song was originally composed back in 2016 when the 2016 election happened. And it is a song called FTD, which stands for Fuck Donald Trump. And it's, I didn't know about it until like the most recent election happened, and they announced the result, and obviously like everyone in DC was very happy with that result. And so I was, and this is kind of what my walk-off win is that my parents came down to DC, and it's the first time that I've seen them since they came down to DC since I moved here. So they helped me move, but then subsequently. So it was nice to see them, and the timing was really good because they were coming down to belatedly celebrate my birthday, but it turned out to be the morning that they called the election. And so it was kind of like a very jubilant, like celebratory environment in the city. And so we were like walking around the city, not in the most crowded areas, because I was like, you guys, it's still COVID. I know we're really excited, but I don't feel comfortable being in this crowd right now. But we still went like kind of to the monuments, and I got to show my parents like the Capitol building and everything. And we're walking around and everybody's really happy. And then because people are like driving by and honking their horns and everyone's cheering, someone drove by and was like absolutely blasting this song out of their window. And it was hilarious, and I was like, I've never heard this before. And I looked it up, and I was like, oh, this is from 2016. And Michael was like, how have you never heard this song before? And I was like, I don't know, but it's incredible. So I highly recommend you listen to it if you have not listened to it before. I'm not going to repeat a lot of the lyrics, but they're really good. I'm just gonna say, it's a really good song. And Michael and I indulged in some listening to it later in the evening, but it was, you know, it was just a nice evening. Like, my parents came to celebrate my birthday, my 30th birthday, so we were already like in a celebratory mood, and it, like, we had more than one reason to celebrate, because the election was finally called in favor of Joe Biden. Obviously, I like, not to get too political on the pod, I know that Joe Biden has his flaws and he's definitely not perfect, but as a blue hen, I'm pretty proud. And I know that, you know, at least it's a stepping stone to something better after what our country has gone through for the past 4 years. So
we kind of said this about you know, the administration and both the Mets. Like, there's adults in the room now.
Yes. Yeah, at least there are adults. And, like, I think, like, primarily as a scientist, it was just like, you know, at least maybe this guy won't fire Anthony Fauci. Like, at least we have somebody who trusts experts leading the helm here.
Yeah, that's a big plus.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that's my walk-off win in combination with my other music pick.
Linda, what's your walk-off win?
My walk-off win is something similar. You know, I was at work on Saturday when the news came down that Pennsylvania was called. So, you know, my mom's from Philly. I have a lot of family in Philly, and, you know, just seeing all the celebrations, like, around the country, like, it felt like I cried driving home from work just to, you know, it gave me hope again. Not to get too political, but, you know, just that this country can stand up and say no. Like, none of this is normal. None of that was right. And, you know, just to see the joy come back. Like, that's what democracy is. And, you know, but I know, again, Kamala's not perfect, but I have a niece and she's 7 years old. And my sister told her this is the first time a woman is going to be vice president. And she goes, oh, my gosh, no way. That's so cool. Like, just to see how excited she got. And then my boss, she has a daughter who's the same age as my niece. And she had the best reaction. Like, she told her, you know, this is a historical moment. This is the first woman who is the vice president. And her response was, well, what took so long?
Awesome.
And I was like, I have the exact same question, Violet. What did take so long? So, you know, like, just Kamala and her saying, I might be the first, but I'm not going to be the last. Like, knowing that my niece is seeing this and other little girls are seeing this, it's such a, like, an unbelievable feeling. I don't even know if it's sunk in. Like, there's a woman in the White House and she's second in command. And it's just a truly awesome feeling for women everywhere. And for women of color too. I mean, I don't want to speak for them, but I can only imagine what it feels like for them. So that's my walk-off win, is what took so long, but it did finally happen, and it's an amazing feeling.
And during the victory speech, and it was also really special that I got to watch that with my parents. But, like, during the victory speech, the way that she spoke directly to young people and to children was really special. The way she was like, you know, now you know you can dream as big as you want to dream. And that was really, really nice to hear.
Yeah, I was sitting on my couch with my kitten crying, so I had the opposite experience. I was not with family. I was like, Maddie, look, it's a woman on TV.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool.
It was very cool.
So my daughter is 8, and so she remembers the 2016 election. And I remember going to bed that night, like 2 in the morning, and just dreading having to tell her what happened the next day. Oh. And so the next morning, I was crying talking to her, and I said, you know, it didn't happen. And she burst into tears, and she said, there's never going to be a lady president ever. And I was like, no, that's not true. I was like, we're going to make sure, you and me, we're going to make sure that's not true. Like, we're going to, you know, we're going to fight. We're going to make sure this happens. And so, you know, when we told her about Kamala Harris, she was like, well, why isn't she running for president? And we're like, well, it's a complicated question, but, you know, it's just like, but she,
maybe next time.
Yeah.
Maybe next
time. Yeah. But she was very happy as well. So it makes me very proud that, you know, again, like you want to raise your kids with the idea that they can do anything. Mm-hmm. And to have actual empirical evidence of that is a lovely thing. So,
and we've said it on our show, representation matters.
100%.
It makes it so tangible now for these girls.
Yes. In that, this is not my walk-off win, but Jill Biden is the first Italian-American in the White House So representation does matter, even down to Italian Americans. So there we go. But no. So my walk-off win is actually, it's about my daughter, though. So as Linda and Allison know, but the listeners may not, I am an avid reader. My wife and I are both big yes. readers. And our daughter is a crazy big reader. She gets a book from the library and she finishes it that day. That's just like, yes. that's how she is. And so we got the email yesterday that she has been accepted into the Gifted and Talented English program at her school.
Oh my God.
And so it just makes me very, very happy that she not only loves to read, but that she's applying herself in school, because I think, you know, I think for so many of us, elementary school was a time before life got complicated. At least for me, when I think about elementary school, I love to learn and I love to read, and I just had such joy in getting books from school and just devouring them. And so seeing her do that and seeing her apply herself is just awesome. And so I'm very proud of her. And so my walk-off win is Amelia getting into the Gifted and Talented program at her school.
Yay. Congratulations, Amelia.
That's awesome, Amelia. Great job.
Yeah, she's great. She read me like two chapters of a Nancy Drew book tonight. So
nice. Good
Nancy
choice.
Drew's awesome.
Yes. That's a very good choice.
Yeah, she's the best. She was almost Amelia Shea, but then her initials would be ASS. So she's Amelia Rose, but she's
deeply unfortunate. Yeah, that would have been not great.
Yeah, she loves the Mets though. She's great.
But Amelia Shea is still very pretty.
Oh yeah, Amelia Rose is very pretty too.
Yeah, she's the best. But anyway, thank you guys for listening to this joint podcast. We should do this again sometime. This was a lot of fun.
It was.
Yeah, for sure.
I enjoyed hanging out with you guys. So if you need to find out more about the Mets, because I presume you know where to go, but if you don't, AmazingAvenue.com is that place. We have been doing some pieces on extension candidates. We've been covering the news. We are, as of tomorrow, voting on the AAOP, the Amazing Avenue Off-Season Plan Contest. So there'll be lots and lots of good stuff in the next few weeks, while hopefully lots of exciting Mets news is breaking. So go to AmazingAvenue.com. Go to Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. Follow us there. You can get this show from Apple Podcasts, from Stitcher, from Spotify. If there's podcasts there, you can probably find this show there. You can follow all three of us on Twitter. Ladies, what are your Twitter handles?
At Linda Servich.
At Petite PhD.
And I am at Brian Needs a Nap. And so, Allison, we have to double team this one. So I'm going to start. So until next time, let's go Mets. And
don't forget, there is no crying.